I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Kanesh.
We're Building Bridges, Chile, the other 9/11, how the AFL-CIO's American Institute for Free Labor Development, AFLD, aided the September 11th, 1973 Chilean coup, where more than 40,000 people were killed, tortured, or imprisoned. We're joined by the extraordinary Shiro labor activist Ruth Needleman, author of the indispensable Black Freedom Fighters in Steel, The Struggle for Democratic Unionism. Ruth, as professor, labor, mentor, teaches workers to stand up for themselves, stand up on the job, to understand their workplace and history, and to develop skills to be more effective representatives of their peers. Needleman created Swing Shift College, working with education coordinators at area steel mills, a unique and brilliant institution for feeding and breeding class consciousness. Now, in 1973, Needleman was in Chile. In the months preceding the military overthrow of the government, along with Charles Harmon, journalist and filmmaker who was executed in the coup d'etat led by General Augusto Pinochet, which overthrew socialist President Salvador Allende, risking death and still defying the ongoing terror campaign directed against her, she bears witness from her direct interaction with the coup supporters and its leading organizers, including U.S. government and U.S. labor officials, to their promotion of fascism. Ruth will also look at the rise of fascism in the U.S. and the similarities with Chile. Ruth, we welcome you.
There has never been just one labor movement. We have always had different factions representing different stratum and classifications within labor. Skilled, unskilled, craft, industrial. There's all kinds of divisions that have always existed and are used to divide us.
But I want to go back to 1973. You were...
Well, I actually got there in July 72. It was after having set up one of the very first Latin American studies programs in the United States. This was at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And I was teaching Latin American studies, but like every working class student, I had never been there. So I decided, after I finished my dissertation, to take the summer, take a leave, and take a sabbatical, and go to Chile, where there was a president who was promising a peaceful road to socialism. I wanted to see that. I went down there, and I had contacts with people. It was incredibly exciting, because things I thought I knew, I realized I didn't really understand. For example, I've always looked for class consciousness. That's such a good ideal, that workers should be aware of who's on their side. They should be able to stand up and fight. But I never saw a working class conscious in that way all at once. I arrive in Santiago, and I am hearing workers using highly political language, balance of forces, this strategic turn, this juncture, this, because they were living in a revolutionary situation, and it was hard to not take sides. And by taking sides, they were exercising their class consciousness. But I was seeing it for the first time en masse. And what I learned when I was there, unfortunately, was that there's a difference between the ruling class, the elite, and counter-revolutionaries, class-conscious rich people. Because there was a big difference, because I met people there that were very clear they wanted to wipe out workers. They wanted them to be completely under control. Allende was not really a socialist. Allende was in the Socialist Party, and he probably believed in the long term of moving in that direction. He was a doctor. He set up free health care clinics. He helped build housing developments. All the progressive things that we look to many leaders throughout the world for. And to see this happening was incredible. The first day I was there, it was raining, and I had to take a bus downtown. And people said, just get on the bus. And first bus drives up, and it's actually not a real bus because there were no spare parts, so there were not enough. They were using anything as a bus, including those old Volkswagen buses. It was ridiculous. So bus goes by, people are hanging out the windows. I thought, I'm just going to wait. But then I realized, no reason to wait because it would always be that way. And I grabbed onto somebody. I was hanging not even on the stairs. I was kind of hanging over the air, but eventually got pushed into the bus and heard this incredible conversation in the back of the bus. There was a guy complaining, this damn country, we can't get what we need. Look at these buses. We don't have this. We don't have that. And this big woman kind of moves towards him, says, listen, brother, you are so stupid. And I'm like, what's going on here? And she began to explain how the United States had set up an economic blockade of Chile, thus denying them spare parts. And since the U.S. controlled what Chile bought because it was the colonizer without the name, she was explaining to him how imperialism works. She was doing it in a way that he could understand, and it wasn't hostile. And I said, oh, my God, that's working class consciousness. Hmm. And so there was a lot of wonderful things going on. But even before Allende was elected, Nixon ordered whatever it took to make sure he didn't take the presidency, because he looked at Allende as an ally of Cuba. In his eyes, there was nothing worse than another Cuba, which means that anything progressive, I think this is a hard thing sometimes to understand. They always talk about getting out the communists. Who are the communists? They're usually the workers next to you. They're workers, everybody else. And some of them belong to something called the Communist Party, but most of them don't. But they know what they're against, and they know what they want. And in the eyes of the leaders of the U.S. labor movement, that was anti-American.
We still have to instruct people here. The AFL's CIO's secret war against developing country workers, the solidarity or the sabotage. So how do we move from there, and what do we know directly? What do you know about the role that the largest labor federation in the world played in sabotaging the class consciousness and the workers' movement and aiding and supporting
the international department of the AFL-CIO has been controlled by Cold Warriors before there was a Cold War. The leaders of the American Institute for Free Labor Development, which was their educational arm in Latin America, all came out of the CIA or OSS or the Counterintelligence Corps in Berlin. They were all military men, professional anti-communists. They were not labor people. And these were the people that controlled international relations. And as George Meany said himself, of course we work there with corporations that won't recognize unions here because this is in the interest of the United States. Well, it's not in the interest of workers there or here. But that didn't matter because it was all about control so that U.S. corporations could make so much money that workers in this country would get paid, if they were in upper stratum, get paid a little more. It was very selfish. It was very ideological. But this educational institute, which has been exposed for teaching rotten trade unionism, that wasn't the problem. It was primarily for intelligence gathering, being used as a channel to get operatives into the country. When Allende was elected, AFLD shut down its in-country programs, although they increased the number of Chileans coming to the United States for training by 400%. What did they train in? The head of it, the second leader and long-term head of AField, literally said in an interview, "We don't teach about organizing and collective bargaining. We teach how we got rid of the communists in the AFL and the CIO." I mean, he just went on and on. The State Department and even the Congress, when they investigated AField, said what they're teaching is useless, destructive, and they wanted the funding stopped because George Meany, cold warrior that he was, used it. Now, intelligence gathering. This is important because thousands of workers got killed. They were identified by the American Institute for Free Labor Development to the military in Chile and to the military in the United States because the two Americans, Charlie Horman, you mentioned, from New York, was murdered with the approval, and it took 40 years to find this out, of U.S. Naval Intelligence. Our own arm of labor in this country has worked consciously and constructively to destroy any unions in the world, but certainly in Latin America, Africa, and Asia, that were against U.S. corporations, so that U.S. corporations could plunder unhindered. How could that be in the interests of workers here?
Well, Ruth Needleman, take us back to the period in proximity to the coup and shortly before Charles Harmon and Frank Tarugi were actually seized and executed in the days following the coup, September 11th, 1973. You had an opportunity to speak with members of the U.S. government and various other entities that were facilitating the coup. So tell us what to whom you spoke with and what you learned.
Yeah. So while I was in Chile, there was this huge counter-revolutionary stoppage that was supposed to bring down the government. It happened in October 72. After it was over, I went down to the publishing house. I said, "How can I help?" They said, "Well, do a chronology of the October strike." And they piled few million newspapers in front of me. But after I did the chronology, I said, "Why don't I go interview these guys?" I started with the out front leader of this guild for truckers, but not truck drivers. These were truck owners. See, this got all confused in the press. This was a collection of employer guilds who turns out to be very important because he studied with AField in the United States, and they, with him, began an organization that becomes decisive in overthrowing the government. So it is an AField-created organization, instrumental in attacking the economy by bringing the engineers out of the copper mines. This is in April of 73. So I did all that. I interviewed all the leaders, including the head of the National Association of Manufacturers, the head of the Organization of Latifundistas, and the Agriculture Society. They were the core of the commando that was running the strategy to overthrow, and they were being given large quantities of money through the CIA. But through the CIA, funneled through the unions, funneled over to the International Trade Secretariats in Europe, and then sent back with operatives who pretended they were AField. One of the things I learned from somebody in New York, because when I came back, I decided I'm used to interviewing the activists and the leaders, but I went for the jugular. So I interviewed the top people in AField, some of the top people involved in the Trade Secretariats, and the State Department. And I got some incredible interviews, but I never published it.
Can you name some of those people and tell us what they ideologically or what they practically told you about their work on the coup?
The leaders of AField were helping the CIA funnel money into the commando. For example, there's a report from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on CIA activities in Chile, which starts out by saying the intervention was massive and continuous. But a lot of it worked through what they call private trade organizations. These were AFIELD and the ITSs. International Trade Secretariats. They were left over from World War One, but they weren't functional. They became functional shortly after the scandal revealing how the CIA was using foundations as fronts for delivering money to operatives. When that happened in the 60s, a lot of things had to change. So all of a sudden, I found, and I did interview, they gave me budgets. They gave me too much. They were so silly. I just pretended to be sympathetic. So I did speak to a number of people in the State Department. They're not famous people. But inside of AFIELD, I talked to Andrew McClellan. I was brought over to their training center by Jesse Friedman, who, there's a clique of people. They're all gone now. They're long dead. This guy from the State Department, Silberman, who hated Meany. And the State Department hated Meany because they complained that whatever Meany wanted, labor attaches or whatever was done vis-a-vis labor in Latin America, Meany had the final say. And the State Department was pretty angry about that. Plus, there were some people he would nominate, and they would say, this person is totally unqualified. But some of the documents are from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee investigation on CIA activities in Chile. Some things are whited out, but not that much. Plus, documents from the trade secretariats and budgets were given to me by the people I interviewed. Until one day, when I testified in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on the economic blockade and what we had done to bring down Allende, I walked into the interview in the afternoon with somebody I'd already talked to, and he said, it's Matahari.
What is the takeaway? The AFL-CIO's role in the 73 coup in Chile.
It's still going on.
Okay.
The current president of the AFL-CIO also sits on the board of the National Endowment for Democracy, which is the new CIA front that funds groups all over to support U.S.-friendly candidates. The NED gives a lot of money to some people right now in Asia who are challenging China. And it sounds good. We're supporting a democratic movement. But that's not why they're supporting it. They're supporting it to use them to get rid of the government. It's total intervention. And the thing about labor is we need solidarity globally because everything we deal with is global operations and networks. Until we realize how many people were murdered and turned over to the military with the help of the AFL-CIO, we're not going to understand why people look at us with an eyebrow raised to the moon. So that is very important because I look at what's at the news today. And for some reason, the people who are being flown to whatever that island is, they're all Venezuelans. And every time they mention them, they say, where they're fleeing communism. No, they're not.
Oh, of course, yes.
The people are leaving Venezuela.
Martha's
they
Vineyard.
Are fleeing
yeah.
poverty and the blockade. Mm-hmm. We need to know and understand this. We need the AFL-CIO to take accountability. They have never, and believe me, I have tried too, and there's people trying right now, to get those documents out. But most of the documents, according to somebody who worked for AFIELD and left because he realized it was a CIA front, he made it clear that the files were not kept at the AFL-CIO. They were kept at the CIA. He told me the names, like the head of the housing project was a naval officer. The head of personnel was naval intelligence. I mean, what is that? This is a labor organization. It was an operation, not an education, and it was subversion, not solidarity.
We're talking about more than the turn of the century. Over 50 years, we still haven't had any meaningful accountability for Charles Harmon, and for Frank Tarugi, people who were seized and executed. And I know that you have testified, but there has not been any real accountability. No. Whether the people are living or dead now does not matter to me. The point
there
is
are,
their roles.
Yesterday, an article on Portside, that all of the briefings that were given to Nixon are still completely classified.
And so are the works.
50 years ago.
And so is the material relevant to the AFL-CIO's international operations.
But most of it never was at the AFL. That's the hard part, is to really understand that this was not a union effort with some bad apples. This was an intelligence effort with a trade union cover. And it was our money, our reputation, and our jobs, because when things get bad enough one place, they bring it on home. We helped them introduce neoliberalism into Chile, destroyed the working class of that country, but now that's what we're discovering, we're facing. And so we need to understand cross borders, and we need to embrace workers as one class, not we're workers, rah, 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 but we don't want those Chinese workers to get anything. Anyhow.
Cross-border solidarity.
A-Field was closed down, and they realized that they had gotten a horrendous reputation for all the coups that they helped carry out all through the Americas. So the head of it at that time said we had to change course. So we started to talk more about human rights and realized that there's a form of capitalism that's not friendly called neoliberalism. They were so stupid. But anyhow, so they called the new version the Solidarity Center, but all of its funding comes from the CIA through the NED. The NED funds all of this work, and it is CIA money. That's why the AFL-CIO was involved in taking out the government of Bolivia, trying to overthrow the government of Venezuela, because they were not to our liking. But the people there liked them and voted them in. So we got to get wise, we got to get educated, and really understand the ties that bind us.
Well, the ties that bind us, I want you to just draw the analogy from a labor perspective as to what the coup in Chile and these interventions by the U.S. government and the security state funneled through labor, which sabotaged and sacrificed the working class, the workers' movement. What does it teach us about where we are today in this country? What are the lessons?
Well, here's just one trend of lessons. When I got to Chile in July of 72, a lot of people were saying no to civil war. And the right wing was saying we're leading a civil war. And it could be the U.S. We can say no to civil war, but we have a confederacy organizing to overthrow the government. And we have to begin to see things for what they are. So I'm in Chile. That was one thing I saw. The other thing was the police. The police are becoming more and more like the old slave patrols, which is what is happening in this country. In other words, control the streets means two things. It means get all the others out and put our militia. So the Proud Boys, all those groups, just like Fatherland and Liberty, which we, the AFL-CIO, gave money for. And what they did was terrify people, throw bombs, and start fires. And they were just so similar. So part of the playbook of coup is you got to get there over time. The U.S. tried to do it even before Allende took office by having the chief of staff killed. It backfired. But when that didn't work, they started with the October stoppage, then the strikes at the copper mines. Meanwhile, they were building this major militia force in the streets. They were cutting off the economy, the U.S. blockade, plus hoarding. I mean, the rich people had food and poor people had food. And the, if you want to have a coup happen, you have to neutralize the middle class. And that'll be true here, too, that you can't overthrow a government unless you have pushed more people to the right. And the way they did it in Chile was by taking away their cooking oil, then they took away their toilet paper, then they took away their food, then they couldn't find matches, then they had all the street gangs and people became scared. They whipped it up from there. And so there's many parallels. There were some false military attempts at coups, but they didn't have enough support. I don't see our military as quite the same, because their military was totally trained in Panama by our military, trained to be pro-U.S. and anti-communist.
Well, Ruth, I thank you for speaking with us. I love listening to people who have gone through the experience and have so much to teach and continue to walk that path for equal rights and justice, and for a working class to assume, hey, state power.
Speaking. And next year is the 50th anniversary of the Chilean coup. There will be events all over. Here in the Chicago area, we're going to have 6 months of exhibits and programs, and we will have a commemoration for Charlie Gorman and Frank Tarucci.
Were executed with the cooperation of the U.S., and there still hasn't been any real accountability in the days shortly after the September 11th, 1973 coup. We'll have you back. We'll talk more about that, and actually we'll do a real series on the Chilean coup. Ruth Needleman, thank you.
Or the Brazilian, or the Uruguayan,
exactly.
Or the Venezuelan, or the Bolivian. I mean, they just did, and that was the Solidarity Center was working to take out the president of Bolivia.
And then we're going to have to leave it right there. We've been speaking with Ruth Needleman.
This has been Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Educate, agitate, and organize for the empowerment of we the people, for another world is possible.